Thank you. Praise band. And Judy, this is the first time you're up there? Very good. Thank you. Boy, we appreciate you. Right. What could be better for than someone doing this for the first time? I tell you what, I was afraid that maybe this mic was on and I was actually screwing up the praise band. Anyway, I can see my pocket is, have you heard of butt dialing? Well, this is apparently what I was doing. Well, friends, it was a cool, clear morning. The end of an era of night work, the dawn of day work, and he was glad. He would be able to reveal himself to the people. No more sneaking around at night. He would enter houses during the daylight, the way normal people do. No more sliding down darkened chimneys, picking coal out of his beard. And those weren't the only problems. When you're talking to elves all day, it gives you the stoops, and talking to reindeer gives you the stupids. So now he would be able to talk to real people, have real conversations. People could thank him personally instead of leaving plates of carrots and cookies. His health would improve too. He could use UPS, FedEx, save his back, save his eyesight too. You know, they say it's hard to land an airplane on an aircraft carrier at night. Can you imagine landing a sleigh on a roof by nose light? Now, I've always had a red, shiny nose. Ever since I was a kid, I've had a red, shiny nose. I'll tell you, it gets me nothing when I'm in bedroom at night in the dark. I can't see anything. Well, friends, he could also get himself a Lincoln. And when he wanted to go forward, he could just press on the gas, no more having to yell out on Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, and Vixen, and so forth, every time he just wanted to move forward. People would finally get to know him, and that was the good news. The bad news was that he had to leave the North Pole. They liked him up there. The elves looked after all of his needs. He had this big red recliner. He could put his boots up. He had a big red fluffy bed he could sleep in. At the North Pole, he was king. Everybody loved him. Everybody needed him. Everyone wanted to help him. They polished his boots. They trimmed his beard. None of them could understand why he needed to go, but he was. He had left messages last year saying, "I'll see you next year." But he wasn't certain they had understood. He told his advance men in the mall, "Hey, tell people I'm coming soon," but that might not have been clear. His best introduction to what he was doing was a letter. He wrote a letter to the President of the United States, wrote it himself, his own handwriting. Here's what he wrote. "Dear President, all these years I've been bringing you presents, just as your mother told you, even when you're in the White House, got a lot tougher security and such. But now I'm planning to come to America during the day. I plan to lead the parade in New York City to lead the people to a better way of life. Please make all the arrangements. Ho, ho, ho!" Signed, S. Claus. And so on Christmas Day, he landed in New York. He expected a crowd. Maybe the president, surely the mayor, certainly he would get the key to the city, but no one was there to greet him. He went to the place where the parade was supposed to start, and no one recognized him as being special. The police told him to move along, or he would be arrested. No one seemed to care. Everyone seemed busy with their own life. And so he tried to check into a nice hotel. Everywhere was booked. Or at least when he showed up, this guy in red and white with eight animals, they said, were booked. So he couldn't find a place. Finally, there was this little place that said, "You can stay in our garage." And so he did. When he called home to the elves to report, they were shocked. They could not understand. In fact, that very morning, the Santa Historical Society had called and said, you know, we've been studying sled trails in the skies, we've been studying Santa messages, and we think something's afoot. Something is changing. We think that Santa is coming during the day. And the elves confirmed that that was true. But neither the elves nor the Santa Historical Society could understand why more people didn't know. And so the Historical Society called the president, and suddenly someone at the White House remembered that message from S. Claus. And so they started to read and reread the message until they were sure that Santa planned to take over the world, to take over the United States at least. After all, anyone who could fly without fuel, who could conform to any space, who could be in thousands of places at the same time giving out free stuff, must be a threat to democracy, certainly a threat to the president. And so they sent out the FBI to search all the New York hotels for old guys with white hair. Uh-oh, we lost our slide. For old guys with white hair and white beards. And their order, liquidate. Kenny Rogers, gone. Anthony Hopkins, he's history. Colonel Sanders, well, he's out of here. It's a good thing I wasn't in New York City in that week, or I would have been in big trouble. And so Santa went into hiding. There was no place of rest or safety for him among those he had come to help. He was despised, rejected, full of sorrow, and acquainted with grief. Okay, let me just stop there and get the PowerPoint up. Oh, it's up behind me. I'm sorry. This is the problem with partial information. I'm looking at the back screen. It turned off. I figured I wanted you to look at the scriptures that are going to come up. Friends, that's a parable. In case you came into the church and said, what's this guy talking about? What kind of Christmas sermon is this? Well, you're talking about Santa. What is that? Well, friends, when we think about Christ, what comes to mind? Don't we tend to think about the end of his life? The cross looms so large, right? We think about his unbelievable love, his willingness to be tortured and killed for us, his sacrifice that allowed you, those you love, your friends and families, to live forever, to avoid eternal death. It's just so incredible, right? I mean, he gave us the possibility for eternal life. Think about his triumph over Satan, that he proved to the universe that his way, his law, his love was right. And so I think we focus on the cross. But how many times do we think about the beginning of his life? Sure, we think about the beginning of his life at Christmas, but do we ever think about what the spiritual message is, the theological message is about the beginning of his life? I think, friends, that the beginning of Jesus' life teaches us some important spiritual lessons. And so I want to talk with you this morning about the front end of his life, the Christmas side of his life, as opposed to the back end, the Easter side of his life. So I'd like to have you turn with me to Galatians chapter 4:4. It says, when the time had fully come, God sent his son, born of a woman, born under law. What does it say about the timing of Jesus coming? It tells us that the time was right for Jesus to come. The time had fully come. Now, how can that be right? Doesn't Jesus coming seem a lot like my Santa parable? Doesn't it seem they had the wrong year or the wrong decade or maybe the wrong century? It sure seems to me, at first glance, that it must be the wrong time. And I'm a guy that's sort of an expert on bad timing. I've always had trouble with time. I remember when Marge and I were dating, I'd been invited to this party, so I decided to take Margie with me. Margie, by the way, is my wife, in case you don't know. That's some stranger I found. And so we showed up at the home of the friend the day of the party, and the first thing I noticed was that there were no other cars around the house. You know, generally when there's a party, there are all sorts of cars jammed in. So I thought, we must be here first, right? We're first. So we were dressed up. We walked up to the door, rang the doorbell, and the mother of our friend came down looking like she was cleaning the attic. We were dressed up, of course, as I just mentioned. And so we asked her what she was doing, and seeing it's the day of the party, and she was asking us what we were doing, and when all of us got answers to all of our questions, we learned that I was a week early. When Marge and I were discussing dates for marriage, she gave me some choices, and I was a man of vision. I'm still a man of vision. I could envision all those times in the future where I'd get in big trouble for forgetting my wedding anniversary. So what I did was I chose the date that was the last day of the month. So all I had to do was remember the month. I didn't have to remember one out of 365, one out of 12 was the challenge. And so if you ask me, the resident expert in bad timing, I would say that Jesus came at the wrong time. But Galatians tells us, absolutely not. It was exactly the right time. Frankly, I'm shocked that it was God's plan that no one, except for a few stargazers and shepherds, would realize it. Is that possible? Now look, when I preach, and this will be a disappointment, obviously, to you to hear. When I preach, I spend some time on this. And so preaching, preparation, standing up here and preaching, it's all the same whether I have 10 people or 10,000. Well, 10,000, that would be something. But let's say 100 instead of 10. And so I say, pack them in. Bring them all in here, friends. Bring your family during Christmas if others are traveling. Hey, pack them in. So let me ask you, Jesus was bringing a life or death message. People had to hear it. Obviously, God wanted them to hear it. So why weren't the roads to Bethlehem jammed with people looking for the Messiah? Why were there more animals present than human beings to witness his birth? Do you really think that God's Son came unwelcomed, unrecognized, and unregarded because that was the plan? I think the answer lies in a parable. A parable, not this time from the Bible, not from my imagination, in Luke chapter 14. Let me read it to you. Jesus replied, "A certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, 'Come, for everything is now ready.' But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, 'I've just bought a field and I must go and see it. Please excuse me.' Another said, 'I've just bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me.' Still another said, 'I just got married, so I can't come.' And the servant came back and reported this to his master. Then the master of the house became angry and ordered his servant, 'Go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame.' 'Sir,' the servant said, 'I've done it. You know, what you have ordered has been done, but there is still room.' Then the master told the servant, 'Go out to the roads and country lanes and make them come in so that my house will be full.'" You say, Bruce, that's the answer to a poor attendance at Jesus' birth? Yeah, I think so. I think the story teaches us spurts. When you probably saw the introductory sign, you said, he just misspelled spirits, right? I know the AV people did. They said, hey, is there something wrong with the spelling in this? No, spurts. How many of you make up words? How many of you make up words in your family? When Marge and I first moved to this area, we had to talk about the Hampton Road Bridge Tunnel a lot. You talk about the Hampton Road Bridge Tunnel. My wife and I call it the Herbert. no Hampton Road Bridge Tunnel. We'll take the Herbert, or maybe we'll go the other way, right? So we call it the HRBT Herbert. If I were preaching a boring sermon, and hopefully I'm not, I would be sparring, right? You know, when you're eating junk food and there's this little residue that is on the wrapper, well, that's Twinkie Doo. When you are eating your vegetables and they're corn, you know, or peas, and it seems like they're just a kernel or a pea or two left there, and you're trying to corral them with your fork or your spoon, those are veggie ludes. If you are driving along the road and you see pieces of rubber from trucks that have been kicking off their tires, that's rubbish. And so a spurt is making spiritual matters first. Spurt is spiritual matters first. Spurting is the act of making spiritual matters first. And spurtation is the state of making spiritual matters first in your life. Giving spiritual matters your first attention. Spurtation comes before justification, which comes before sanctification. You've all heard of justification, sanctification, right? Now, if you doubt me, and there may be plenty of you are doubting me at this point, saying, what is this spurtation stuff that comes before justification and sanctification? If you doubt me, consider Matthew 22, which adds more detail to the story of the wedding. I'm sure all of you are familiar with this wedding parable. You've heard it talked about before in sermons or Sabbath school or maybe your own study. Matthew 22, a couple of additional points. When the king came in to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing wedding clothes. Friend, he asked, how did you get in here without wedding clothes? The man was speechless. Well, you know the end of the story probably. What happens next? They toss the man out into outer darkness. Whoa, that seems a bit harsh. Well, friends, we believe that the wedding garment is the robe of righteousness, right? And the Bible never says specifically when the guests were given the robe of righteousness. But by force of logic, we know that they must have been given it when they showed up at the wedding. After all, remember, the people who were invited, the people who perhaps said to themselves, I think I'm going to a wedding today, I need to get dressed up for it. Well, they didn't come. So all the people who came were people who said, I'm not going to a wedding today. I'm going out farming, or I'm going to go out to do this or that or the next thing. Or they're just wandering the streets. These people clearly would not have wedding garments when they were asked to come. And so they had to be given the wedding garment at the wedding. Friends, the guests got it when they came. But you know, they did not come unless they had spurtation. I'm sure they didn't drag them by their ears in. They said, come. And they agreed to come. They agreed to come to the wedding. They agreed to make that the first thing in their life that day. So they did not come unless they had spurtation. Now, in case you just woke up and said, what? Spurtation? What's he talking about here? Spurtation is the state of giving spiritual matters our first attention. So let's look again at our story. Do you see in Luke 14:17 the reference to timing? At the time of the banquet, he sent his servants to tell those who had been invited, come, for everything is now ready. One of the first things we learn is that the banquet takes place at the right time. Just like in Galatians 4:4, the time was right. Everything was ready. But the wedding guests did not come. Well, there are lots of stories and parables in the New Testament about Jesus coming unexpectedly. You know the parable of the 10 virgins? He comes, right, and they don't expect him to come. This is not a story about the bridegroom coming when they didn't expect it. know, the Bible warns us to be ready about his unexpected coming. This is a parable then in which the emphasis is not upon surprise. It's not about the bridegroom coming when they didn't expect it. They knew exactly when he was coming. He told them when he was coming. And so, friends, I think this is more of a cradle story than a cross story. More of a Christmas story than an Easter story. It is about our lives here and now rather than about the second coming. The murder at the cross taught us his love. The solitude at the cradle teaches us expectation. Let's look at again at Luke 14 and the excuses. Verse 18 says, I just bought a field and I must go to see it. Verse 19 says, I just bought some oxen and must try them out. The Cameron Modern Translation is, I just bought a factory, I need to see it. I just bought a car and I need to drive it. Would you buy a car you hadn't driven? Would you buy a factory you hadn't seen? Reminds me of asking a girl out on a date and she says, I'm sorry, I've got to wash my hair. You know, you say, wait a minute, what kind of excuse is that? I'm not suggesting that the excuse makers were lying. The point of the parable is that putting your business first is stupid on your part and insulting to God. Look at verse 20, the next excuse. I just got married and I can't come. It's not a choice between getting married and coming to the banquet. I mean, their wedding had already taken place. The person was already married, and so the married couple could be together at the feast. And so, friends, the point of the parable is that these people put their business interests, their work interests, their school interests, their love interests first. And the result was that they never got close to wearing the wedding garment. They were never troubled about the difference between justification and sanctification because they never made it to the starting line. They never made it to the wedding. It was a spurtation failure. And so, friends, I'm worried. The failure of the people to make spiritual matters their first priority meant that Jesus came to this earth the first time unwelcomed. Will history repeat itself? Is it repeating itself in your life? Will you miss the opportunity for salvation because you're not paying attention? Will the right time for decision come and we will be preoccupied with other matters? The murder at the cross taught us his love. The solitude at the cradle teaches us expectation. And so, this Christmas, and from now on, I ask you to make spiritual matters first. Make them the first priority in your life.
So this next song talks about your pain. Everybody experiences it. Everybody goes through trials and tribulations and personal problems and issues and suffering and health problems. All of us experience that. And so Jesus, God, never said that we won't experience trials and tribulations and suffering and pain. What he did say is that he will always be there to help us to get through it, that he loves us regardless of what we're going through, and that He will indeed get us through it. So, So it's called Somewhere in Your Silent Night.
Christmas. I'll see you next week.
Merry Christmas.